Welcome to Business Trip, a podcast about the business of psychedelics. I'm Greg Kubin, and I'm a partner at PsyMed Ventures, a fund investing in psychedelic medicine and mental health. I just got back from Psychedelic Science 2023. It's been 5 years since MAPS hosted their annual conference, and the event had amazing energy this year. I brought my microphone with me, so in this episode, I'll share a sampler of interviews and recordings from the week. This is Greg Kubin, and I'm in Denver for Psychedelic Science 2023. With 11,000 attendees, this will be the world's largest psychedelic conference, and it's hosted by MAPS, the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies. The conference is the week of June 19th, and I'll be here for 4 days. In addition to the conference, I'm attending dinners, concerts, after parties, and who knows what else. I'll be recording conversations as I go. I have no set plan. My goal is to provide an inside look at PS23. I am at the Beckley Foundation 25th year anniversary.
Soiree.
First stop of the week. I'm here with Zach Hagney. Of course, I run into him first. Zach Hagney writes the Trip Report by Beckley Waves, a newsletter about the business, policy, and science of psychedelics. He's also been a frequent guest on Business Trip. What's happening, Zach?
Well, let me finish my bite. Sorry, excuse me.
Zach is eating cheese pizza with...
The meat lovers.
This is full on.
So what's happening? Got in last night. I saw a buddy from growing up who lives here, which is great. Caught up with him. Made the mistake of smoking a joint with him and was exhausted. Didn't fall asleep. So I had a rough night of sleep. But it was great to catch up and hit golf balls with him. Today's been an interesting day because I've been working on this project at Beckley Waves that I've spearheaded. And today we brought together a group of subject matter experts that we've been working with the last few months to kick the tires on this incubation project. Brought together like what I think of as like three of the best people in the world to talk about this particular topic. And so I'm really proud of having orchestrated that and brainstormed it and brought it together. We met for about 3 hours, and it was fucking great.
Can you share the topic?
I can share the topic. I can share the topic. So I think that there's a lot of potential. Early evidence supports it, and anecdotally, that perhaps a next port of call for psychedelics is in the treatment of chronic and persistent pain conditions, so a more somatically oriented use case than what we can conventionally think of as mental health. And so we brought in pain experts, neuroscientists, clinicians, drug developers to kind of help us think about how to create a company and a service and create value at the intersections of psychedelics and chronic pain. So it's still early. This is the first time I've been in like a business formation process. And I'm fucking loving it. I'm stoked.
Wow. I'm speaking to the next Jeff Bezos over here.
It's always day one.
I'm here with Miriam Bart, who is a co-founder of Journey Clinical, and we had on the podcast a couple episodes ago. And she was sharing that this is a unique week for her in that the Journey Clinical team is here this week, and they're usually distributed.
Journey Clinical's platform empowers licensed mental health professionals to become ketamine-assisted therapy providers.
So tell me why this is an interesting week for you in that capacity.
Now we have a team, or partially a team, that's been working together for a year, and we see the difference in the how we work together. How like much smoother and easier it is to come up with idea, experiment, learn, pivot, shift. It goes from we need to follow these steps to like being much more fluid. And so for new team members that join, they kind of see it. They're like, oh, you have learned how to work together. And it's really beautiful. And it's so motivating and like giving me so much energy for all the great things that we're going to accomplish together.
How many people are on the team?
We have a core team of 10 people, very, very close team, and we've grown together, like we've learned together. And I always tell them our job as leader is like, how can we learn faster? And that's really how I look at it, and increasing the velocity of learning. And through these experiences in person, today we did a team hike.
Well, sounds like a special opportunity to get your team together for PS 23.
Yes, the team is so pumped. Everyone is so excited. We set up our booth this morning. We have the Journey Clinical. And I hear they're expecting about 12,000 people and a lot of therapists. And so we're very happy to get the word out so that therapists can actually practice psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy with Journey Clinical.
Boom. Well, thank you, Miriam. Okay, so I'm here at the next venue, which is Chris Kantrowitz's birthday party.
So I have to talk to you, my friend, about your podcast audio quality. I'm checking this right now. So when you play this back on the air, I want to make sure there's no echo. I want you to use AI to make my voice sound like Godzilla and ask me a question.
My question is, how do you feel like you have, how you are contributing to the psychedelic renaissance?
I'm trying to destroy it.
I ran into Lauren Taus, a psychedelic therapist, educator, and speaker. Her talk at PS23 is about psychedelics and families, so I asked her to give us a sneak peek.
Life loves you deeply. Like, life desperately wants to live through you. Life thinks you're the shit, and by the way, you are. You're a total miracle. The fact that any one of us is incarnated in human form is an absolute mathematical impossibility, which makes you a unicorn. You're a miracle. Stop pretending you're not. And life, my friends, is an action sport. It's not a cognitive exercise. It's an action sport. You got to do the thing. You got to bring your body, your mind, your heart, and your voice to the thing. You got to bring your voice to your intimate relations, your family. Ram Dass famously said, if you want to see how enlightened you are, spend a week with your family.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not doing so well, right? Like, we're deeply, deeply imprinted by our families. We're literally like walking mom and dad. And we learn everything from our parents. There's an exercise that I like to invite people into, which is to like pull up your phone and type into your browser, how do I learn to? And what you're going to find is that the first answer to how do I learn to is love myself. Irrespective of your algorithm. I've tested this long. So what this tells me is that people don't love themselves, that they really want to, and that they're screaming at their computers. At their fucking computers. They're supposed to learn that from mom and dad and in their families and get that and feel that, and they don't. Like, listen, the only allegiance any one of us needs to keep in our lifetimes is to our own hearts. And the extent to which we don't, we hurt and we suffer. The extent to which we, like, shut up to keep the proverbial peace, we also go to war with ourselves. So the importance of conversations, like, cannot be overestimated. I believe in conversations. So as a therapist, I've been working in the field for, like, 15 years, right? I've never met a client, myself included, that doesn't have mommy-daddy issues. I've also, like, become tired of diagnosing fish in toxic waters. Like, we don't have a fish problem. We got a water problem. And therapy is part of the water problem. I am a therapist. I have a therapist. I love therapy. Go to therapy. And it's a big part of the problem. Let me tell you why. What I've discovered and what I've really, really come to love and appreciate is Betty Eisner, badass, beautiful female psychologist in the 50s who did a lot of psychedelic-assisted therapy. And she named the matrix as the fourth element to be mindful of in psychedelic experiences. Next is set, setting, and dose. So what's the matrix? The matrix is the system in which any one of us is embedded. That's your family. That's your community. That's the water, right? And if we're not addressing the matrix, we're not really getting to the heart of the problem. I cannot tell you how many times in my life as a therapist I've heard, you're the only person I'm telling this to. You're the first person I'm telling this to. The first I can take, not the only. Or you're the only person I feel like I can be myself with. Or you're the only person I really feel safe with. Like, I don't want that. If this is the start, fantastic. But if it stops there, I'm complicit. Wow. Once I can restore a person's capacity to feel, like the next like big thing is to communicate, is to express themselves and in their relationships. Like, how do I tell other people how I'm feeling so that I don't need to do this alone in a siloed space, separate from the rest of my life? That's not it, right? Like, we need to do it in real time. And if a person can learn to feel and express themselves effectively, I can step out. It doesn't mean that life isn't going to be dissonant and chaotic and painful at times, but a person has the resourcing to ride the tides. So, I talk about all this because I've done all this.
So I'm here with Talia Eisenberg at Chris Kantowitz's birthday. And Talia, you are one of the co-founders of Beyond, a ibogaine treatment center in Mexico and potentially beyond. Where's Tom?
Tom,
your other half.
My other half and our CEO, my co-founder, and the love of my life, quite frankly, many lives. He is not here because he believes that conferences are bullshit. And he always says, just if you want to talk to somebody, just pick up the phone and call them. Look at the list of speakers, and if you want to talk to them, call them up. And he also doesn't believe in having booths. He thinks that the truth is that we're doing well. We have a lot of lead generation and brand awareness, and we don't think that we need to have a booth.
So what brings you here?
So the reason I'm here is because I need to get out of the cave. I need a lot of texture. So I need to leave Cancun every couple weeks. I either go to Miami. I was in Japan 4 weeks ago with my mother repairing childhood wounds as part of my healing work. And I'm here because, yeah, we're dealing with really severe mental health. It's a mental health facility, truly, in all senses of the word. It's a grade one medical facility. We get severe trauma cases and severe addiction. Like, I'm talking fentanyl addiction. With sprinklings of optimization cases, people that are doing great, have worked with psychedelics or, you know, meditating and doing all the things. But mostly, it's really intense work. Yeah, we're surrounded by that. So coming here is a reprieve for me. I feel like I'm on retreat. Or it's fun for me.
So it's 12 p.m. on Wednesday, June 21st. I'm walking to Andrew Huberman's talk with Genevieve Jurvetson. And a lot of people are walking in this direction.
I want to dig in a little bit, if you're open to it, to your MDMA journey. And I really appreciate that you've kind of been open about talking about this. And it's interesting to hear that you've done 4 treatments. And I think people don't realize, for some people, 1 treatment's great. For some, 4, 5, 6, we don't know. So I'd love to hear more about what you learned from those experiences.
The first time I did it was a very somatic experience for me. And I think that the major conclusion takeaway, there were 2. One was about midway through the session, this poor therapist left the room briefly, and I was overwhelmed with the most profound sense of loneliness I've ever experienced in my entire life. And I'm somebody who spends quite a lot of time despite my podcasting role, I like people, I like interactions, I'm pretty introverted. But I recall in that moment thinking, well, this is great, like if I can tolerate this, I can learn from this, if I can learn from this, I think I can export something here. It felt like there was something there, there was some texture to that experience. And then they returned and I felt better, but the feeling better came before their return. And what's amazing, what became very clear and amazing to me in that moment was that, having been somebody who's done many decades of therapy, for reasons at first against my will, and now with my will, I felt like I was able to run many iterations of the loneliness experience and have it in its most extreme state, and so I got to test it in its extreme state, which is oh so very different than sitting down with a therapist done many times before, and talking to them about an emotion that I had a few days ago. So it's happening in real time, and the neurobiologist in me who's spent a lifetime working on neuroplasticity kind of went, whoa, so this is what it is, because with neuroplasticity, what you want is the combination of feeling and thought and action in real time. They need to converge in a very potent way that's different than your background level of emotion, feeling, and thought in some way. Otherwise, there'd be no reason to alter the circuitry.
Okay, I'm with Hamilton Morris, who's currently getting a photo taken of him. This is the fifth photo of him I've seen people take. Hamilton, what brings you to Psychedelic Science 2023?
I was just giving a talk about tryptamine chemistry this morning, so I came for that.
Can you elaborate on anything you shared this morning?
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about this guy, David Repke, who made really important contributions to the chemistry of psilocin analogs and never gets any credit for it.
Okay.
I think he's like a unsung hero of the psychedelic world. And so I talked about my love of Repke's work.
But so basically psilocybin, the prodrug of psilocin, what was his discovery in that process?
Oh, he developed a method for making psilocin from 4-acetoxyindole as opposed to 4-benzyloxyindole, which eliminated the synthetic step and just worked way better. And then he also had some nice innovations for purifying psilocin derivatives via vacuum distillation. But he also just did the work. Like, he made probably like 30 psilocin analogs and wrote these two seminal papers, Psilocin Analogs 1 and Psilocin Analogs 2. And his process is used in pretty much all the major pharmaceutical psilocybin companies, Usona, Compass, Beckley Psytech. They're all using the Repke chemistry. I just feel like I find Repke really interesting. It's good chemistry. It works really well. It's cheaper, better yielding, eliminates a step. It's really
so I just ran into Mike Rosenstein and Donick Carey of Good Trip Studios, amongst other fame. Woo-hoo. And they're on their way to a Wall Street Journal interview.
Yes, in a lunch interview, no less.
Okay, so you're going to be eating while being interviewed. What are you going to talk about?
I guess so. I don't know. We're here doing a booth. We have a concert that we're doing tomorrow night as a benefit for MAPS. It's with the Flaming Lips, Eric Andre, Reggie Watts, Chris Holmes, Fascinated by Everything. We're going to have basically a festival with live painters, and it's at the Mission Ballroom, and we're promoting it. So if you're listening to this and it's June 21st, go tomorrow.
That, if you're in a time loop, and you can go back in time. But okay, Donick, you have something to say.
Well, I was going to try to answer your question. Mike was very, did a good job of politically blending the question into our agenda. Our agenda with Wall Street Journal is nothing. I think we're going to talk to them about the business of psychedelics. And then I actually was literally, as we're walking to this, going like, I wonder what we can add to that. And I was thinking like, well, we're kind of trying to be the promotional tool for all of this with Good Trip content and the story of psychedelics through a bunch of different stories and projects and docs and cartoons and stuff. So that's what we're talking about.
Back to Mike.
Yeah, our goal is to destigmatize psychedelics through entertainment. So we started with our movie, Have a Good Trip, Adventures in Psychedelics on Netflix. We're doing a sequel to that right now. We're animating a show about trippy toads going extinct. And, we're really doing a lot of entertainment projects from TV and film to live events like the concert.
Some heavy shit with, like, veterans and some crazy shit with toads and all kinds of content in between.
We're about to go down an escalator. Are you coming with us?
We're going down an escalator. Yes. But I'm going to go up the escalator after this. So we have about 30 seconds.
We turned you around completely. Wow, this is a great, quick interview.
Maybe it's interviews on escalators.
Yes.
Yeah, going up, going down.
Going
up. And then...
That's it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Going up, going down. So going down is Psychedelic Science 2023. That's what's going down.
I love it.
Thank you.
This is like the new elevator pitch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Escalator pitch.
Okay, so I'm online for Poke at a place called Poke Club, and I'm here with Slava, who's a friend and an investor in our fund. And so I asked him what are his intentions for being here. He doesn't work in the industry per se. So he's going to give his response. Slava, what are your intentions for being here?
Yeah, so my original intention was as an investor in PsyMed, just to understand the industry a little bit better, meet people, and get a feel of what's going on in the psychedelic industry. But then on a personal level, I figure out I need to be a little bit more specific to get more use out of my being here. So I'm trying also maybe to find a therapist who's practicing psychedelic-assisted kind of therapy. Maybe learn a little bit more about the technology of production of different psychedelics. Just curious about how people do it. And also look for new investment ideas and other investors to share some kind of expertise with them or get their expertise.
So I'm on my way now to hear Stan Groff speak, which I'm really excited about. Stan is a psychedelic pioneer. He led a lot of the research in the 1950s around LSD and its therapeutic potential. He helped develop transpersonal psychology, which is a framework that extends beyond the ego and the self and into the mystical and spiritual. And he also helped develop holotropic breathwork. So really curious to learn what he wants to talk about. I tried to get him on the podcast a couple months ago, but he said he no longer does interviews at his current age. He's in his 90s. Stan's wife, Brigida, shared a few words about his legacy.
So this, we really believe that working with these states, also with psychedelics, you really need to experience things yourself. The theory is great, but it's not enough. And that's the beauty and the power also of the Groff work, to really experience these states. And actually the holotropic breathwork, the Groff breathwork, is an excellent tool to learn that without any medicines, you know. So also what is special about the Groff work and training is learning the focused body work. If things are not resolved, we are teaching that for the integration of the processes. And this is also another really important part of our work, is that it's trusting the inner healing intelligence. So there's no plan, because our intention, of course, there is an intention, we want to heal or know something about ourselves and develop, but no special idea, because that trusting this inner healing intelligence is so much more powerful than coming from our heads. So that's really the specialty about this work. And the psyche, trusting that the psyche will bring up the material that's relevant for transformation and healing.
So I'm here with Daniel McQueen from the Center for Medical Mindfulness, and they are working on a really interesting project called DMTX. Daniel, can you describe what DMTX is?
Yeah, it's short for extended state DMT, and it's an infusion process using similar technology as ketamine infusions or anesthesia. And basically we give a person a shot of DMT, and then we hit the start on the infusion, so it allows a person to stabilize at a breakthrough experience. And you can do it indefinitely, theoretically. We did a series with 30-minute infusions, 7 sessions, and it was really amazing.
There's this idea of the DMT realm, right? Or the dimension that some people feel like they experience. Can you describe, I guess, what was discovered in that first 30-minute DMT, extended DMT session?
Well, have you taken DMT? Have you ever?
I have.
Yeah, so you know, it's like a rocket ship. It's very disorienting. And as soon as you start landing and get your orientation, you start coming back. So it's like within a minute sometimes, right? So imagine being able to lift off into that space and stay there long enough for your heart rate to calm down, for you to reorient to this other dimension, and then explore it. And what we found in the first series was, and this is mapped already with regular DMT, we just got to stay in the spaces. So there's this pre-breakthrough space, sometimes they call it the waiting room, where you're in a psychedelic experience, but you're very present and you're more here than there, right? Then there's a space that's more there than here, and those are the breakthrough spaces, and that's where the entities live. And then there's a space beyond that, which is more of a universal states space, like unity consciousness, oneness, love, just like these eternal states. And there's not a lot of entities in that space. And so we're exploring the different levels and looking for a protocol where we step into the waiting room and then go in and then bump it up and go into that middle space and have a dialogue with whatever shows up to meet us on the other side.
And so were you the participant in that first DMTX experience?
I was the guide for the journey, so I didn't go through that first series. I wanted to be the ground and the person who really stayed present for everybody. So I sat for 7 journeys, and I got to have these extended conversations through my friends, through the journeyers, with these entities on the other side. And because it was stable, they really appreciated that. They described it as, we don't bump into their reality unannounced. We're able to step more gently into their space, and they're able to welcome us better. It was really interesting.
Who do you think these entities are?
Well, they describe themselves as being made from the fabric of existence, whatever that means. And that's their language and the experience of the journeyers. They would morph out of the field that was around, like the visual field. They would come out and were made out of that fabric or that substance. After having this experience and really sitting with it and listening to Andrew Gallimore talk, I think they're real in some way, and maybe other dimensional or higher dimensional. Definitely more than 4D realm that we live in. I think it's more than just an hallucination of the mind. And I'm trying to figure out what that means for my worldview, because it feels so real when people are in it, you know?
It wouldn't be a psychedelic conference without a little drum circle. So I'm running into Jonathan Davis. Jonathan is a producer and editor on the Business Trip podcast.
That's a Greg Kubin.
Jonathan's holding a microphone, and so am I.
And we're not even getting any like feedback or anything like that.
Are you recording the conference?
I am recording the conference.
Were you recording a talk?
I was just recording this. I can't believe you weren't in this talk, The Next Generation of Venture Capital. I thought you were going to be on the panel.
I was actually sitting in the third row, and then I ventured out to have a sip of water. And then in classic conference maps style, you run into people, you start a conversation, you run into other people. So I'm looping back now.
Nice, 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 nice.
Did I miss anything?
No.
I mean, one thing that I heard at the beginning was that I got an updated number of the total amount of dollars that have been invested into psychedelic companies. It was $2.9 billion have been invested into the space. So into the space. The space is the deep space. But that number was larger than the last time I saw an updated number. So
what was the last number you saw?
$1.5 billion. But most of it's going into drug development.
It doubled.
Yeah, good to see you too. So this is day 2 of psychedelic science. Definitely getting some Burning Man vibes in the sense that there is a lot of serendipitous run-ins and encounters, a lot of openness and people striking up conversations. I was given a necklace that has a jewel on it by a fairy. It's a nice touch. And as I'm saying this, Paul Austin is walking by. He's not wearing shoes, which is part of the vibe of today.
Paul,
are you recording something for the MAPS conference here presently?
I'm presently recording some thoughts about how the day is going.
I think no shoes is the move. The carpet's quite comfy. And my Birkenstocks were getting a little blistery. Unfortunately, they're not as broken in as I would hope. And this venue is just so massive that I'm just trying to ground and earth a little bit.
I hear you. I mean, I haven't considered it yet, but I think I will probably try it at some point. I would be mindful of going to the bathroom without shoes. What's your plan?
I do not go to the bathroom without shoes.
So you put the shoes on to go to the bathroom?
Absolutely.
Is this the first conference you've attended without shoes?
It is not.
It's a lifestyle?
It's a way of being.
It's a way of being. I mean,
I think microdosing without shoes is the future.
This is fun.
This is fun. It's good to, I mean, what are your thoughts so far on the conference? What are you digging? What are you liking? What are you not liking?
Yeah, I would say I'm having a great time. Well, first of all, bringing 11,000 people together that are interested in psychedelics is awesome. I like the diversity of people here, right? You have some folks in the business community. You have some folks that are fairies that are in their drum circles. You have folks from the indigenous community. I like the multidisciplinariness of it. That's one of my big interests in this whole field, is just how there's so many different perspectives.
So much diversity.
So much diversity. My mantra for the week is, I am exactly where I need to be. It can at times feel overwhelming, and you hear, oh, did you hear so-and-so, and likely...
Did you make it to our party last night, Greg?
I did not make it to your party last night. Tell me about it.
Microdosing Collective. We had an intimate, about 350-person party at a place called Clubhouse Studios, music, time to connect, drop in. So the Microdosing Collective is a 501c3 nonprofit with the intention of creating a legal, regulated framework for microdosing, because a lot of the current legislation is explicitly for high doses. If there is microdosing that's protected, for example, in Oregon, it's prohibitively expensive. I think in Oregon, it's $500 to take a microdose legally. So how do we develop a regulated environment where people can take microdosing as they're doing now, but do so with trusted products, purchased from a trusted vendor that is in basically a legal environment?
So I just ran into Sutton King, who has been a tremendous advocate and community builder around indigenous representation within the psychedelic field. And Sutton just shared with me that she has spoken twice already at the conference. She's going to be moderating a panel tomorrow. And I want to know what the gist is of what your message is this conference.
Yeah, Poso, Shagoli, Sutton King, Naktau, Pinuki, Nukyats, Nguahue, Ni'i, Wakneta, Nawagitalota, Oniota Aga, Ni'i. Hello, relatives, Sutton King here. I'm the program manager of the Indigenous Medicine Conservation Fund, and I'm the co-founder and president of the Urban Indigenous Collective. And I'm here at MAPS to really raise awareness about Indigenous voices, bioculture conservation. I think we're at a historic moment right now as a collective, and we would be remiss if we did not acknowledge where these sacred plant medicines came from and the plight of Indigenous peoples to protect them and steward them. And we all have a collective responsibility to ensure that Indigenous voices and our territories are being protected and elevated right now. When we talk about access to these medicines, we have to also understand, in a traditional sense, access is the conservation of the plants itself, right? And so here with the Indigenous Medicine Conservation Fund, making sure that folks know about the work that we're doing, the conservation of ayahuasca, iboga, mushrooms, peyote, and toad, and just really ensuring that this community is being in right relationship as they engage with this beautiful, sacred medicine.
Let's get tactical. Walk me through how this manifests with companies. What does this mean, how companies can show up here?
That's a really great question. And I think one is cultural due diligence. If you are a practitioner or a leader of an organization that is wanting to commercialize these medicines, whether they're the botanical or the analog or even cultural traditional knowledge, you have a responsibility in access and benefit sharing through the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, known as the UN DRIP, and the Nagoya Protocol. And so what is that? The United Nations Declaration Rights on Indigenous Peoples
Peoples really is a global document that really states how we can support self-determination for Indigenous peoples globally, the protection of their land, culture, and their rights, right? And when we are looking at benefiting from the medicines that come from our territories that we've protected it our entire lives, we must engage in consultation. So being able to do free, prior, and informed consent is a really important part of this, right? Making sure that Indigenous peoples know about the projects you are starting to work with, making sure there is informed consent, making sure that there is access and benefit sharing that's being negotiated through mutually agreed upon terms. And, you know, when we think about benefit sharing, that can be monetary or non-monetary. And I see a lot of companies in the space that are engaging in benefit sharing, but they're missing a step of consent and consultation. And it could be said that benefit sharing without consultation is just another form of bribery.
Yeah. Boom. I just dropped the mic and I just picked it back up. So is there precedent for how industry has partnered with Indigenous communities outside of the psychedelic space and other industries, something, a model we can look at to learn from?
Yeah, I think we can look at agroforestry. I think we can look at the cosmetic industry. I think we can even look at basmati rice, right? I think there are a lot of different businesses and different medicines that have been stewarded and co-created, businesses that have been co-created that have used the Nagoya Protocol. And I think within the psychedelic space right now, we can really look at an amazing case study, which is Iboga and Ibogaine and the Gabonese government and the Wiiti people and the negotiations they've been able to arrive at to have export and import with Iboga and fair and equitable sharing of benefits with the Wiiti people. And so there was an amazing panel yesterday. The Indigenous Medicine Conservation Fund supports Blessings of the Forest, and they've been integral in that negotiation and making sure that the people of West Africa are being represented and are having their voices heard as their medicines are being stewarded and commercialized around the world.
Next, I chatted with Floris Wolswijk, founder of Blossom, a psychedelic insights platform with a weekly newsletter I subscribe to. Like many folks at the conference, I had previously only met Floris online.
Okay, so what has been interesting to you at the conference so far?
I think it's super interesting to see the legacy that Roland Griffiths has left here. I was at his benefit dinner yesterday, and you just see the people that he has touched, the legacy that he's leaving now behind him. And today he recapped the research that he's been doing over the last 30 years. And I think one of the culminations of it is going toward seeing what is the meaning that psychedelics can give people and the impact that can have on them. He and Anthony Bosses and Cody Swift and other colleagues have done a study on religious leaders and seeing like, how do psychedelics impact them. And it wouldn't divulge too much information. They still want to publish the results in a scientific journal, etc. But it did say that even for them who are experienced in spirituality, it was one of the most meaningful experiences of their lives, and that it deepened their practice. I think it's really interesting to see that even for people who are spiritually engaged already, you see the same thing with meditators, is that it does have a long-term positive effect, and that within a safe container, etc., is really also still helping people who have more experience with altered states of consciousness.
How would you define spiritual?
So in this case, I would take it very broadly. So both in the study with the religious leaders, for them it meant something around Judaism, around Christianity, around Buddhism. But then in the other case, for meditators, it could just be people meditating in whatever denomination. I think spirituality is a very broad concept. I think also that's how Griffiths looks at it.
Yeah, it is broad. It's kind of like we're using a word to describe many, many, many things. It's probably too broad of a word. Perhaps.
Yeah, it could be, but I think it's nice that it is a broad concept because then it can encapsulate a lot of different things, and it doesn't per se need, that you don't per se need to have a well-known religion around it, but it can be a spiritual practice without a God as a personified being, but more that unity experience that I think a lot of people have in psychedelics and other altered states of consciousness.
Ryan Field is the CEO of Kernel, a neurotech device that measures brain activity by changes in blood oxygenation.
So you have an interest in neurotechnology. What do you want to measure, diagnose, as it relates to psychedelics?
So there are two big areas that I've seen over and over again. One is there are a lot of new therapies coming out. So, you know, for people who have an illness like depression, for example, in a few years, there could be dozens of potential therapies, right? All the new molecules and variants, psychedelic, non-psychedelic, and they all have some level of efficacy. How do you pick which one to use for treatment? Like, which one is right for that individual? And wouldn't it be amazing if you could measure the person and say, like, you know what, you're going to respond to psilocybin-assisted therapy and not ketamine-assisted therapy, so let's do psilocybin and go there. So that's one big theme.
Yep.
The second big theme is these treatments are not cheap, and there's a big push to increase the cost-effectiveness of the treatments. And a good way to do that is to only give the treatment to people who are going to respond, right? And so, again, if you can take measurements on people and use that information to determine the right treatment, increase the rates of efficacy for those given treatments, you reduce the overall cost of the system of treating people.
And getting more tactical and technical for a moment, explain it like I'm five, how you're measuring brain states actually can do what you're saying is possible.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of good work out of Stanford and other universities showing that fMRI, which measures a very similar signal to what we measure with our technology, has been able to show some predictive biomarkers for treatment prediction, so treatment response prediction. So we have a good foundation from academic work that's been done before. And so we're in the process now of gathering data to see how good of signatures of brain activity patterns to make predictions about what treatment would work for an individual. So it's really a machine learning data science problem at the end of the day, but it's gated by access to technology that can scale and create that large data set, right? So to date, the tools that researchers have used can only really be used in research institutes. Mm-hmm. And the big thing we're doing is bringing it out into the clinics where the point of care providers are and like treating patients so that you can more easily measure them and collect these data sets.
Last day of the conference, packing my bags, getting ready to head over to the convention center. Definitely a bit sad that it's coming to a close. MAPS has done just such an incredible job of bringing together so many people across the psychedelic field. And the talks have really been inspiring, really on the level of TED Talks. And so many meaningful interactions have connected with many people who I only met online on Zoom. So that's cool. You get to see how tall and short people actually are. And yeah, a lot of serendipity. So I'm walking around an area of the convention center called Deep Space. And I'm like, holy shit, this is cool. This is so cool. It's a really, really large, dark room. And when I say large, I mean like hundreds of feet by hundreds of feet. And there are installations like you'd find in Deep Playa at Burning Man. For example, I'm looking at an art car of a golden dragon. To the right of that, there is a little bit of a housing structure with neon lights that are red, purple, pink, blue around the archways of the doors that you can walk through. There's a gong. There's a workshop going on where a facilitator is guiding people into some sort of visualization. He just encouraged people to move their faces, because that's a way to change your emotional state, to move your face. Didn't know that. There's a heart that's about 10 feet tall, painted the colors of the rainbow. There's a turtle that's about
8 feet long with really beautiful lighting on it. The lighting is green and blue, so you're getting that aqua feel, especially because it's in this big dark room. I'm seeing a bunch of psychedelic art that's displayed on multiple walls. One series are images that seem like otherworldly realms. Blue, pink, purple, very galactic. Okay, there's a sculpture of a giant bear made out of wood sitting on the ground. Ooh, seems like maybe it was Alex Gray or someone who makes art like him of humans dancing. But you can see their skeleton, you can see their chakras, you can see rainbows that are flowing through them. I'm gonna walk towards this chanting. Some sort of ceremony is about to begin, it seems. There's a group sitting in a circle, and there's someone who looks Native American with a big flower headpiece. Someone just got turned away, so it's full. And now I'm at the actual Alex Gray section. He does a lot of tributes to psychedelic pioneers. I'm seeing one of Sasha and Ann Shulgin, one of Albert Hoffman. I believe he just displayed one of Roland Griffiths. In his classic way, he'll display the veins, the skeleton, the rainbow auras of people.
So I am here at a booth that is titled Ancient Awakenings Temple of the Healing Arts. And I was intrigued to learn more. So what is your name?
So my name is Bibi, and I am one of the founders of Ancient Awakenings. We are a psilocybin church, an etheogenic church located in Tampa, Florida, close to Tampa. And what we do is we host retreats on a monthly basis, which is 3 to 5 day retreats. During these retreats, our guests are hosted fully from lodging to food. We also do a main ceremony, which is our psilocybin ceremony.
So who is facilitating the psilocybin journeys?
So
ceremonies.
So these ceremonies are, we have a plant medicine woman, and her name is Sunshine, and she is the only one who handles the medicine.
Who is she? Can you share more about her? Is she, like, when I think sometimes about the concept of the church, I think of maybe someone who is, I mean, obviously in more religious terms, a priest or the conduit, or in certain indigenous terms, it's the shaman. So is she representative of any of those types of things, or is she really a holding the space for the participants? Like, how do you think about her role?
Whether or not she embraces this title, I feel really like she is more of following the path of like a shaman, right? I wouldn't say she's comfortable with that title yet, as she has continued to work through her experiences and her studies, but yes, that is really the role she plays. She does provide the medicine. She does hold space when we are that in ceremony. And she does have Native background, but that is not really where she's coming from. We could say that we are in the midst of creating a new tradition, a very eclectic tradition that brings all of our different paths together to one. But if you're looking to better understand, like, what is that path, what is that faith, it really all goes back to love, compassion, healing, and really seeing and understanding how important community is, how important tribe is, and how important it is to assist to the best of our ability to provide the tools necessary for you to do your own healing. We can't do the healing for you. but we can absolutely show you all the tools and provide a sacred and safe space for you to be able to follow your path of your religion, of your belief system, with understanding that this medicine and all the tools that we are providing can help continue you and facilitate you into those journeys.
So I'm in the exhibit hall, and I walk by a booth that has Aya microdose samples. So I decided to go up to the booth, chat with the gentleman who's part of, it's called the Great Spirit Father Healing and Retreat Center, based in Tampa. And he basically gave me a microdose of Aya. They were branding it as Aya, but it was just the Kapi vine. It wasn't the chacruna leaf. So he said, when it's just that, it's not psychoactive.
Jaden Smith was interviewed by MAPS's chief impact officer, Natalie Ginsberg. Jaden is Will Smith's son. He's a psychedelic advocate, and here he described how he facilitates psychedelic journeys.
And that's what Trippy Summer is really all about, is, you know, creating those conditions to have a spiritual epiphany, whether it's on top of a hill or at the beach or on the grass field. What's the perfect music? What's the perfect group of people? What's the perfect vibe? What's the perfect time to stop and meditate? What's the perfect activities to do to make sure that everybody stays right now and doesn't, people aren't getting on their phones, like really creating places where people can have these positive experiences, you know, and it's always nature, and it's always a beach or a hill or outside and just in the air, you know, and I think that takes us back to that intersection between sustainability and psychedelics as well.
And I'm running late, so okay. We can walk in that direction.
Okay, we'll drop you off on the way. I'll peel off.
This is Shelby Hartman, founder of Double Blind Magazine, my favorite cultural resource about psychedelics. She was one of the first guests on Business Trip.
Okay.
I want one moment that comes to mind from this week.
The panel on the impact that psychedelic legislation is having on Native communities, very profound conversation.
Any tweet level takeaways?
That we all need to take pause because it's possible that this whole thing is happening through a colonial lens and a replication of the systemic challenges that we're facing more broadly in our culture.
What can we do about it?
Gosh, that's a good question. I mean, I'm not the expert here, but I would say reflecting, not moving too fast. Someone once told me capitalism doesn't move at the speed of trust. Reconnecting to the earth, asking the elders.
Amen. Thank you.
Welcome.
As the conference was wrapping up, I asked a couple attendees to share their highlights.
What is one highlight for you of PS23?
That's a tough question, but I think that the merge between indigenous people and plant medicine, scientifics, psychologists, and psychiatrists all together in the same place, that's something that we didn't see it before. And I think that that's the future.
How about you?
You know, like you said, just the convergence of all these ideas, the convergence of the old and the new and the creation of something entirely different. Someone called it ancient future, and I like that term a lot. Going back to an old way that worked better so that we can go forward to a new way that works even better. I think this is a good time for that, a good time for everyone to kind of converge with their ideas and their cultures and their beliefs and shape a new world.
So the day is winding down for me. It's 4:45. I just left a talk about psychedelics as tools for consciousness given by some university researchers. We're studying it rigorously. Definitely having a bit of late conference blues. It's actually going to be sad to leave the energy of this place. Thousands of people convened with a mutual interest in psychedelics and healing, including the drum circle that I walked by the other day, which is going strong with some dancers. Very slow movements. Definitely feels like the dancers see things that I don't see. But it's a nice dose It's a nice dose of self-expression, especially after leaving a talk that is all rooted in the mind and science. There's the balance of the music and the body and the spirit. That's a wrap for my dispatch from Psychedelic Science 2023. It was such a big event and everyone did it differently. This was my experience. Thanks for listening. This is Business Trip, a podcast about the business of psychedelics. If you like this episode, you can help us by subscribing to the podcast and leaving a review. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at SciMedVentures. And if you're building a company in frontier mental health, hit us up at hi@scimed.ventures, which you can find in the show notes. I'm Greg Kubin.
And I'm Matthias Serbrinsky.
Our producer and editor is Jonathan Davis, with production coordination from Caitlin Nur. Sound design and engineering came from Nico Ray. Our theme music is by Dorian Love, and additional music credits are in the show notes. This is Business Trip. Thanks for tripping with us. We'll see you next time.